I feel your every breath. I hear the words you say.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
Is it true?
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway.
The heart is so willing to follow.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1986 Richard Benjamin film, The Money Pit. Executive produced by Steven Spielberg. And a remake of 1948's Mr. Blanding Builds His Dream House, starring Cary Grant and Myrna Loy.
I was wondering if it was a remake. I was shocked when I saw it that it was a Spielberg flick, and I was like, oh, boy.
Do you remember Bruce Williams, the radio host?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, Mr. Blanding's Builds His Dream House was one of his favorite movies.
Huh.
He always said when people, you know, that people shouldn't just buy a house expecting them to instantly make money. So this is about the perils of home ownership.
of which you've learned about.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, I'm afraid that it will be a constant learning process. But, hey, you know, it's in a lot of ways it's better than renting. In some ways, not so much.
Well, yeah, you're just the landlord now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, who would I call indignant when something goes wrong? That would be me.
Yeah. Well, no, your wife calls you when she's indignant.
Yeah, well. No, where do you think I get the money from? So it's, yeah, it's all crazy. Anyway, what do we know about the director Richard Benjamin?
I don't recognize the name.
Well, let me tell you some of his other movies he's done. And these are ones he's directed. My Favorite Year with Peter O'Toole. Mermaids, starring Cher, Winona Ryder, Christina Ricci, and Bob Hoskins.
Huh, okay.
The Whoopi Goldberg, Ted Danson classic, Made in America.
Oh, Lord.
The Ed Harris, Melanie Griffith classic, Milk Money.
Just for edification, I saw Made in America in a movie theater.
Yeah, well, how about the Lisa Kudrow, Damon Wayans blockbuster, Marcy X?
Never saw it.
Yeah, me either. So this guy is, he's a director of many films. They just aren't necessarily great films.
Well, he did Westworld, apparently.
The original Westworld?
Yeah, 73, Yul Brynner.
Oh, well, yeah, and My Favorite Year of Peter O'Toole, that was an Academy Award nominated, at least, movie.
Yeah.
And then he did the movie City Heat, which, remind me who was in that?
Clint Eastwood, Burt Reynolds.
Yes.
Why?
Yeah, well, it was a thing. This is back when Burt Reynolds was a thing.
Okay.
84 would have been just after all of those Smokey and the Bandit movies, and just before Evening Shade.
Huh.
Anyway.
So that's after Cannonball Run?
Yes, after Cannonball Run, I believe.
Okay.
Had to have been. All those movies, I think, were late 70s.
I don't remember. I think... No, Cannonball Run was 84. Oh, that was the second one, sorry. Because, yes, there was a sequel.
Of course.
Cannonball Run 2. No, 81, Cannonball Run.
Oh, well, okay. It's all a blur for me.
Yeah. No, I like Cannonball Run, or I remember it being funny, but then again, I was 9, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, and this, The Money Pit, happens to be a great favorite of yours.
It is a favorite. It's because it's a hilarious movie, and I think I texted you. I watched this on my plane ride back from Alaska to Portland, and I laughed out loud on the plane like an idiot, like several times.
Oh, as I was watching this, and I don't know whether I've sat down and watched it all through ever, but I must have, because I must have seen all the individual pieces 20 or so times. This is on your frequent rotation list, at least that Drew remembers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it was high on my rotation list, but yeah, I think it was one of those that we had a backup copy of in the house.
Yeah.
If you understand.
Yeah.
So yeah, break the code there. And I'm not notoriously a Tom Hanks fan, so I don't. He's kind of like the Tom Cruise and, you know, Mel Gibson, if you will, where, you know, I like that he can perform well when he performs well, but like him alone isn't going to make me want to see a movie or not see a movie. Like him, his presence doesn't assure my interest in a movie.
Well, this is the era, I believe, just after Big, like back when Tom Hanks was zany Tom Hanks. And, you know, from Bosom Buddies, Tom Hanks, and not, you know, while he was, you know, America's greatest everyman actor of his generation, which I believe he is now.
Well, he's got some pretty, I mean, he's done a lot. I mean, he's clearly not just an actor anymore.
He and his wife are producing stuff, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to say Rita Coolidge, but I believe her name is Rita Wilson.
Yeah, I believe it's Rita Wilson.
Yeah, but Rita Coolidge and Rita Wilson, they both take you higher. Higher and higher. Baby.
Yeah, so Splash was in 84. Bachelor Party was in 84. The Man with One Run Shoe was 85. Volunteers was 85. And then The Money Pit was 86. So, yeah, this is before Big and before Dragnet.
Okay, but when was his first, like was Philadelphia his major, like, dramatic part? Or was, there must have been something before that.
No, I don't know. It's hard to know, but Philadelphia was probably the most dramatic. He was in Punchline, which wasn't very, I mean, Punchline, a lot of people didn't watch Punchline. But Big was where it kind of put him on the map, is like he could be a serious actor, kind of.
It's still a comedy role, really.
It was a dramedy, but yes, it was more of a comedy role. So, but he had that, you know, he had that horrible, well, I don't want to say it's horrible. That movie with, I think it was Jackie Gleason, Nothing in Common.
Yeah, actually, I think that was probably his most dramatic movie to that period.
That period it was.
And then you get things like Philadelphia, and then back-to-back Oscars with Apollo 13.
Yeah.
And then you've got, like, The Green Mile.
Well, yeah, and Castaway.
Oh, yeah, well, exactly. I've never seen Castaway, by the way.
Oh, it's a great film.
Of course, I've never seen either Philadelphia or Apollo 13.
Apollo 13 is a great movie. Philadelphia is a fantastic movie, but it's not something I can sit through again.
Yeah, I don't want to watch it. That's one of those things
It has a great gravity to it, and it's very emotional, and that also it has kind of a, you know, because I'm part of a community that it speaks to, and I emotionally have connections to friends who have lost, and so Philadelphia kind of strikes a chord in me. So watching Philadelphia was traumatic, just watching it. And so watching it again on purpose makes no sense. I'm like, I wouldn't willingly do it. Unfortunately, every now and then I'll flip the channels, and it will be on a movie channel or something, and I get sucked into it, and I know I'm just, I should turn it off and go do something else, and still I can't, I'm powerless to turn the channel. It is a great movie, and you should see it if you haven't seen it, but it will not be for this podcast. So, but Castaway is a great movie.
I think if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong because he has a gigantic catalog, I think one of my favorite Tom Hanks movies is Joe versus the Volcano.
Oh, that's a great movie.
We should do that at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anyway, so do you want to talk about The Money Pit?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
So, sitting through the opening credits, by the way, Yakov Smirnoff.
Oh my God, there's a ton of people in this movie. We open Rio de Janeiro, where an old guy, Walter Fielding Sr., played by Douglas Watson, is getting married to what I presume to be like a Brazilian girl. And after the during the festivities, after the actual ceremony, his new wife regrets that Walter Sr.'s son didn't come to the wedding. Walter Sr. explains that his son has problems. The wife says, well, how can he have problems with a father like you? The father answers, he has problems because he has a father like me.
Which is a funny line.
Oh, yeah. Well, and then we discover why. We hear in voiceover that Walter Fielding Jr., Tom Hanks, and his girlfriend Anna Crowley, Shelley Long, they learn of his wedding in Rio de Janeiro after he fled the country after embezzling $2.9 million from the musician clients of their law firm. And then we have the opening title sequence with the bad 80s theme song Heart Is So Willing by Stephen Bishop.
An opening that had seemingly no connection to the movie.
Oh, no. And the shot of New York City, it's not quite a skyline shot. It's more of like a traveling over the city shot.
They're kind of cityscapes.
Yeah, but isn't it like grungy looking?
Well, also don't forget this is an older movie.
Yeah, so. But it is muddy looking. I mean, it looks like smog, and it's not something you'd do as a postcard to your city.
No, they weren't tourist shots.
No, not at all. Although you did get to see the World Trade Center.
Well, there's a lot of stuff there, but yeah, no. But I wrote down. I'm like, the music in Cityscapes opening is not a bad visual, but I'm really not sure what it has to do with the movie because they live in the city. Is that what they're trying to do?
Well, yeah, and the city isn't like a big character in the movie. I mean, I guess you should be. I mean, they start out in the city, and that's where Walter wants to stay, of course. But it's not like this could be any major city they're in.
Right.
But anyway, so after the 80s song by Stephen Bishop, which is going to be the opening song to our opening of this podcast, it's so 80s cheese. Oh, my God.
It is so 80s cheese.
But the next morning, Walter proposes to Anna, and she tells him that she does not want to marry him, not because she doesn't love him, but because she's had a previous bad marriage experience. And this is when they're interrupted by Yakov Smirnoff.
A very, very young Yakov Smirnoff, by the way.
Yes, just off the boat. And this gang of Russian employees of Anna's former husband, who is Max Biesert, the composer, played by Alexander Goodenough. Alexander Goodenough of Die Hard fame. And not apparently a lot of voice training. Or English lessons or something.
Yeah, but he's believable.
I suppose. I mean, he's over the top. Let me tell you.
I don't think so.
Well, I know we're going to...
He had some pretty hair, though.
Oh, no. He looked like the maestro, that's for sure. Absolutely. He looked the part, and his lines were right. It just seemed like he couldn't quite pull them off. There were a lot of things about this movie I thought were a little clunky. I think it's more like this is... Maybe a hallmark of this director is not being super great. But they were serviceable. But then we got to the point where I actually involuntarily, and I hardly ever do this, especially at a movie, laugh out loud. I actually laughed out loud several times watching this.
Me too.
But anyway, we'll get there. So we discovered that this New York apartment that they're living in is actually Anna's ex-husband's apartment. And now he's returning from wherever, and they need to vacate immediately. But
well, also, it's telling that nobody refers to him by name. They only refer to him as Maestro.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a big deal. And he also, turns out, Anna, her job, I mean, we know that Walter's job is a lawyer. We don't know quite yet what that entails, but we're going to in a second. But Anna's job, she plays violin for a symphony orchestra, which Max is coming back to conduct. And there's one line in here I'm going to drop in just for Connie.
There have you been, for God's sake, you're almost late.
Monica, in this country we have an expression for almost late. It's called on time.
Yeah, that made me laugh.
And then after listening to them perform a song, Maestro says, the union forces me to give you a lunch break.
The union forces me to allow you to go to lunch in spite of the way you've played. Those of you with consciences will not be able to eat. Then those of you whose consciences match your talents, go stuff yourselves. I hope you choke.
It's actually a pretty good line.
It is. He's got some actually pretty good lines. I wrote later on, I wrote down his entire speech at the end. So.
Oh, yeah. No, he has a really good speech. And he has a funny little aside, but I'm sure we'll get to that as well.
Yeah. No, he has probably some of the best, I don't know, he has some of the best one-liners in this movie, or the best writing anyway.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So then we cut to Walter. He's a lawyer representing rock bands, including White Lion.
Yeah, no, it wasn't White Lion in the movie, though, was it?
I don't know if they ever gave their name.
Because they were saying, you know, this brother and sister and blah, blah, blah. And so, because they never made it. And I wrote down, my God, is it White Lion? And then, of course, in the credits of the movie, I was like, holy shit, it is White Lion.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely White Lion. Now, did White Lion have a hit at some point? They must have.
Yes.
Can you name one?
So I own a White Lion album. So.
Oh, wait. Okay. All right, then.
Let me check Wikipedia because I don't want to get it wrong. Because
yeah.
I don't know that they had a hit.
Well, I mean, I remember the name. I think I can probably envision their album cover too. I believe it had a white lion on it, like an illustration.
Oh, legal issues. That's unfortunate.
Well, while you do that, let me explain that this is kind of an odd scene because Walter is actually there to deliver money to the manager of White Lion, Jimmy. And he delivers a couple of different checks and explains how he got the money from selling certain things. And Jimmy's like...
Right.
Jimmy's like...
Restaurants.
Yeah, Jimmy's like, you keep the money. Like, what do you mean? Well, the band is used to people from stealing it from them, so this is just going to confuse them. And Walter's like, oh, but you're their manager. He's like, yeah. Oh, they're your sister and your brother and your other brother. And he's like, I like you better. So we find out quickly that because of Dad's embezzlement, they really do have not much money. They can scrape together a ton of cash. I mean, what we would consider a ton of cash.
Right.
But Walter contacts his friend, real estate agent Jack Schnittman, played by Josh Mostel, who, by the way, has recently started jogging to lose weight. Cue vacuum, followed by dog barking at vacuum.
The funny thing about the jogging was I wrote down, Jack is jogging while Walter is walking.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's actually a pretty funny line. He's like, I've been doing this for 6 months. Next month, he's going to run in a 1K.
Yeah, 1K.
You know, if you don't actually like walk or jog or whatever and check your mileage out, you really don't realize how short 1K is. 1K is a very short distance.
So sorry to digress. I have the White Lion Greatest Hits album.
So they had greatest hits.
Yes, they had several albums. I'm surprised at how much they actually had. The only song that I really know that was Wait, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. There's no real, nobody's really alluding to the fact that they had hits.
The song is Wait?
Wait.
Like, wait, wait.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Well, I can, yeah, see, I can envision. I may drop a little weight in here. We'll see. God knows I have plenty of weight to drop, just like Jack Schnittman.
When the Children Cry, was it White Lion's song?
When the Children Cry?
Oh, yeah, that was their hit.
I'll have to look at When the Children Cry. That sounds like a horrible hair band song.
Little child, dry your cry. Cause you were born into this evil world where man is killing man and no one knows just why. What have we become? look what we have done. All that we destroyed, you must build again. When the children cry, let them know we tried. 'Cause when the children sing, then the new world begins.
Oh, and that's a slow song. It was used in like, I think it's used in like one of those Feed the Hungry Children ads now, like the Sally Struthers organization.
Oh, maybe they get royalty off of that. Good for them.
Yeah.
Of course, they probably use it to pay those aforementioned legal issues.
Yeah, they've had, yeah. So anyway, so between Wait's the song that I like, but When the Children Cry, I think is probably what people will remember them for. And once you hear the song, you'll hear a couple of chords and you will know the song.
It's is it written in the sad key of D minor?
I couldn't tell you.
Minor keys are for sadness.
Yeah, no, it is fantastic. I will. I should post a link on the page of the video. I'm sure there's a video of it. So.
Yeah. Well, now the scene. Maybe we'll back up a little bit. So as because Jack Schnittman, real estate agent, has just started jogging, he wants Walter to meet him at the track. So Walter meets him at the track, and yeah, he's jogging and sweating like crazy. And as Walter is just walking along and telling him to sweat the other direction, please. And he has this device on his watch. It's like a heart rate monitor, and it keeps giving him alarms. And he's apparently had several hilarious heart attacks in the last 6 months, and there's a funny little line that I'll probably drop in here. Asking when he's in the ambulance riding with Jack and the paramedic, and he asks, has this happened to you before? And Jack said, yes. The paramedic said, 7 times in the past 5 months. And Walter's like, I thought this was supposed to get you in better shape. Jack says, it is. And the paramedic says, yeah, thanks to the jogging, I can lift him to the ambulance.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Do you remember, do you recognize the paramedic?
He looks familiar, but no.
He is Wendell Pierce, Bunk, from The Wire. I think he's also in the show Tremé.
Oh, I've never seen The Wire.
The Wire is so worth seeing. But I know everybody says to watch it, so I realize that most people will think, okay, if everybody tells me to watch something, I'm probably not going to watch it, just to spite them.
Well, there reaches a point where, I mean, eventually I'll watch all this stuff, but it's just like, yeah, my desire to engage in something is directly inversely proportional to the number of people that tell me I must.
Yeah, yeah, me too, really. Anyway, so I always thought it was funny to see a very young, relatively skinny Wendell Pierce. So through Jack, Walter learns of a $1 million distressed sale mansion on the market for a mere $200,000. And I'm sure you're going to drop in the speech.
Why would somebody sell a $1 million house for $200,000?
Who knows? Divorce, loan sharks, drugs, sudden death. The point is, you get to capitalize on a fellow human being's misfortune. That's the basis of real estate. We got a deal?
I knew you were gonna go for that.
Ah, the basis of real estate? I think it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And then we cut away to Max wants Anna back, but Anna loves Walter. And she clearly says...
But Max has such pretty hair.
Yeah, Max is in love with himself.
She says so.
Yeah. That's why it didn't work. Now, back at the apartment, apparently there's two people, I guess, what, employees of Walter, maybe, or something, that are playing ping pong. It's never clear who these people are, except they're with Walter and Anna, and they need to move when they do. But the guy says, hey, a girl called. She said she's taking a lot of pills and was going to kill herself. And Walter says, nah, don't worry. I get those calls 2-3 times a week. So that tells you that Walter's a little cold as well. Or these people, his clients, are very plastic.
Or both.
And then his dad's favorite band shows up, Lana and the Cheap Girls. Now, I actually asked you, like, is that Harvey Fierstein?
I wrote down, it definitely is a poor man's Harvey Fierstein.
You know who it is, though? I had to look this up. It's Leslie West. Leslie West, guitarist for the band Mountain. Mississippi Queen. But he was actually really funny. He's like, so they decided they wanted to change the name of the band and call themselves Meryl Streep. And Walter says, no, you can't call yourself Meryl Streep. And as he's walking off, Lana's like, how about Debbie Reynolds?
Which is also hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Very funny. So Walter and Anna go to the house and meet with the house owner, electric grandmother herself, Estelle, Maureen Stapleton.
Yeah, I actually wrote down the electric lush grandmother.
Oh, it's great. And she's there and she's got the house lit with candles, even though it's a palatial estate. And she has to sell it very quickly because her husband, Carlos, has been arrested by the Israelis, having been accused of being Adolf Hitler's pool boy, which... you know, it's pretty funny. It's not Schindler's List funny, but it's funny.
That was funny. Also, the fact that she's like, she's clearly like, she is three sheets to the wind.
Oh, yeah. And she keeps talking about, you know, she has to sell the place fast because she doesn't want the...
blood-sucking lawyers.
Yes, exactly.
She keeps dropping blood-sucking lawyers, and Walter, you know, just looks like, all right.
Oh, yeah, it's hilarious. Well, there's a couple of scenes in here where Walter has to say, no, my name's not Jewish. So, I thought, anyway, so her little sob story and speech actually enchants Anna, who finds the whole thing very romantic. And, Walter's kind of distracted by it, but he wanders off to test the plumbing and stuff and everything looks fine. And then they get to see Estelle's Lincoln. Now, I'm not really a car guy, but that really is a beautiful car.
Yeah, it was.
So, they decide to buy this house. And Anna insists on putting up half of the money needed for the repairs by selling stuff from her marriage. And then Walter goes to get his half from his wealthiest client, Benny.
And I wrote down, Benny, wow.
Benny today would be Justin Bieber, but I think Benny at the time was like a direct takeoff of David Cassidy. Benny is like what? How old do you suppose Benny is?
Maybe he's 12 or 13, maybe. Yeah, but I think that's really pushing it.
Yeah, kind of in that age range. And yet he's, you know, master of his house and his mom is the maid. And he's got his bodyguard who's heavily armed and mean.
Well, he's got a couple bodyguards.
Yeah. And he's all, you know, he's all smoking a cigarette and telling Walter that, hey, he's his tight, you know, speed it up because he's got a girl in the jacuzzi upstairs. So,
but his mother slash maid, who gives him, she just wishes that she had a whole bunch more of just like him.
Exactly. To which Walter's like, yee. But then what I thought was a little bit strange, Walter screams at Benny and wants a loan of $200,000 loan. And Benny's like, no. And then they get into the screaming match. And I suppose that you could take this whole thing as maybe Walter's the only one who ever talks straight to Benny. Cause Benny eventually relents and loans him the money after Walter threatens to not like him anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's actually sort of a sad turn. But there wasn't really much time for character development, so I thought it was just sort of hastily run through. But it's okay, this isn't a movie like that. This is a different kind of movie we're going to find out in just a second here. So, they take possession of the house. And they know that it's a fixer-upper, so, you know, Walter goes out to the shed, and there's this tricky step, so he's going to fix the step on the stairs. And I don't know about you. I mean, I'm certainly no Jesus as a carpenter, but it seems like Walter is just taking random pieces of wood that are already nailed together as some sort of tray or something and just going to pound them into the stair and leave them there.
Well, one of them looks like it's the chassis for the rowing oars for a boat.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That could be.
So, but yeah, he's hammering them. But I wrote, watching Walter hammer nails on the stairs is hilarious.
Oh yeah, because he clearly has no idea what he's doing.
No, because he's like hitting the nail, and I don't know how much of this is improv and how much of this is him really not knowing how to hammer a nail very well. But it's just hilarious, the whole shtick of him like hammering, like hitting a nail sideways, not hitting the nail, you know. And then there's that whole, you know, where he smashes his thumb.
Oh yeah, and that's
because we've all done that. I mean, I've done that more than once. I've done that. And but he has the typical reaction that I have, which is, you know, he puts his finger in his mouth.
Oh, yeah. No, he's selling it. And this, by the way, is the kind of movie we're in. This is like a slapstick comedy movie. This is a Laurel and Hardy, or rather an Abbott and Costello, maybe even like a Charlie Chaplin kind of movie. There's some big set pieces here of physical comedy. This, by the way, the first time I laughed out loud, and I still will laugh out loud, and I can't quite explain it except for the noise that Tom Hanks makes, is that, you know, he locks himself out of the house and he's pressing on the doorbell to get Anna's attention, and he presses it a couple times, and finally he presses it and it like bursts into flame. And he steps out and he's like, ooh. I don't use a big black smudge on the... I just thought that was a beautiful scene.
It's a kind of a nice touch.
Yeah, it's small but, compared to a lot of what else is coming up, but I just thought it was great.
Yeah, but while Walter is fixing the stairs, Anna is upstairs in the bathtub where she thinks she's going to run the bath.
Yes.
And she turns the taps on for the bath. And this is, I think, the first time where I actually laughed out loud, because the combination of the noises that the pipes make and then the rattling the pipes make and then the I don't know what comes out of the pipes, it was so hilarious.
Oh, it was
I laughed out loud.
It was like,
and I wrote,
like Jell-O pudding almost.
Well, I wrote down, is this the bathroom from Silence of the Lambs?
Oh yeah, it's pretty great. It's over the top, but it's pretty great. And yeah, the plumbing noise and shaking and everything, and you're getting the reaction shot from both Tom Hanks downstairs and Anna upstairs. And this is one of the many times where one of the characters will walk out of a room and indicate either directly or sort of indirectly that they never want to go back in that room ever again. Which, you know, if you've done home repairs, you know that it's like, oh no, I just want to walk away. But, among other problems, we have the plumbing full of gunk. We have the entire door frame that rips out of the wall. We have the raccoon who is in the dumbwaiter, which is pretty funny. And then we have the staircase collapse scene. And this, again, is a great, like, Abbott and Costello set piece, physical comedy thing. Because you have Tom Hanks on the stairs as they're collapsing, and then he finally jumps and he reaches both of his hands and he's like hanging, you know, from his hands from the upper stair landing on the second floor, just as Anna, who's had this encounter with the raccoon, comes by there and he's saying, the stairs are out. So she stops herself and he's like, whoo, except she's standing on both of his hands.
Right.
So she steps off of his hands, and of course, he falls down into the stairway, which in another movie would have impaled and killed him.
Pacific Heights style.
Oh, this is one of the... There are times in this movie where Tom Hanks should have died, like several times.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Actually, one of the times is coming up when we're introduced to a contractor, a carpenter named Art, played by Joe Mantegna. His name is Art Shirk, and I just thought, this is Larry from Three's Company.
Yeah.
Except he is downright rapey.
Oh, yeah. He's all handsy.
Oh, yeah. And he's not taking no for an answer either. In fact, when Walter comes and says, this is my wife, and he's like, I don't know nothing about the wife. I just thought she was a good-looking wool.
No, that's not a Jewish name.
You're kidding, right?
Get out of my life, would you?
Touch me, you pig!
Ooh, you're cute when you're mad.
I'm serious. Get away from me.
Hey!
Stop it!
Hey, let go of her! That's my wife!
Oh, yeah? Well, I'm sorry. She didn't say nothing about being married. I just thought she was good-looking wool.
This animal attacked me. I didn't say anything about anything.
Look, I don't want to cause trouble. If I came on a little strong, I'm sorry, okay?
No, it's not okay.
Just get out of here.
Well, okay, if that's what you want.
I think we should call the police.
Hey, let's not get nuts here.
Who are you, anyway?
Art Shirk. I'm the carpenter. I think we spoke on the phone.
You're the carpenter?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll be going.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Maybe we could clear this up.
Clear this up? What are you doing? He tried.
I know, but he's supposed to be a really good carpenter.
He tried to attack me.
Well, he just thought you were a good-looking wool. An attractive woman. He didn't know who you were.
I don't know who you are.
Look. Do you know how hard it is to find a really good carpenter? Besides, I think he's got a brother who's a plumber.
Really? A brother who's a plumber?
I think so.
Do you think I should sleep with him?
Maybe just this once.
I think I'm going to start dinner. My house is going to be great.
I'll put in the scene where basically Walter tells Anna that, oh no, this is the only carpenter that said yes to this project, so he may be a little rapey, but he's our carpenter.
Yeah, he's our man.
Yeah, she's like, do I have to sleep with him? Well, maybe once.
It wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, exactly. As Joe Mantegna, as Art, is leaving. By the way, he's driving a Corvette. Not one of the better years of Corvette, but hey, it was 1985. What can you do? His plate, of course, is AS1. And his stereo is playing I Gotta Be Me as he's driving off. So then we discover...
Sung by?
Is it Frank Sinatra or is it like Tony
Sammy
Bennett?
Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, Sammy Davis Jr. Okay. Very nice. Very nice. So...
Was that your Borat voice?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it's not great.
Okay.
Anyway. So... Yeah.
Well, I don't know how terrible it was. I recognized it. So.
Yeah, well, there you go. So it appears that the only clean water in this whole place comes from the statuary of a little boy peeing. And we learn that they have very weak trees. And then we meet the other Shirk brother, Brad, who he's a plumbing contractor. And he drives a Cadillac that also plays the same I Gotta Be Me song. And he is a little insulted because when he asked for a drink... Walter didn't give him the top shelf stuff. Now, Anna and Walter actually want to take a bath upstairs, but they have to heat the water and drag it up the ladder to use the bathtub. So Anna's upstairs, I guess, preparing the bath, and Walter's downstairs with a bucket trying to heat up the water. And he turns on the TV in the kitchen, and Julia Child is on TV. And
making crepes, Suzette.
Yes, and. A, I love this kitchen, because B, we own most of the appliances.
Yes, it's true.
So this is set piece number 2 for the physical comedy.
So he turns the light switch on and immediately, like, incredulously, like, starts a little fire and then races through the wires up the wall and around the kitchen.
Yeah, cartoon style.
Yeah.
But in a very funny way. And it eventually races to the Oster blender that we had, the very same model. And the, I don't know if it was Black & Decker, but it was the air popcorn popper.
Yes.
And eventually it gets to the turkey going flying. And, you know, because the oven ends up exploding and launching the turkey out of the kitchen and upstairs into landing in like a bucket or something upstairs in the same room as the tub. And then we have this surprisingly erotic turkey timer popping out. And the whole scene ends with when they pour the water in the tub because they just, Tom Cruise comes up the stairs and it seems like his shirt is burned mostly in the nipple area, which that was weird. But then he's like,
he has some odd char marks.
Yeah. And he's like, I just want to, I just want to take a bath. So they pour the water into the bathtub and the bathtub immediately crashes through the floor and smashes all over the floor below.
But his turkey expression, his expression after the exploding kitchen, his expression when he goes to Anna and he's talking, you know, no, I don't want to talk about it. no, we'll never go to the kitchen ever again, ever. The kitchen's done.
Oh, yeah.
But his expression is so genuine. Like, it's so, like, I have felt exactly like that. Like, I'm done. I don't want to talk about it. We're not going to discuss it. We're not going to go there. We're just go on from here. But it made me laugh so hard out loud on the plane, because I have felt and said and done exactly those things under different circumstances. So it was really well acted, because you believed that he was really like, I'm done.
Oh, yeah. Well, and when she points to the turkey, it's like, what are we going to do with that? And he's like, that can't hurt us anymore.
Right.
And then when the tub finally goes crashing through the floor and into the floor below, there's a pause, and then he starts laughing this strange Eddie Murphy laugh, this really snorty laugh.
Hysterical laughter.
Well, the turkey's done.
So is the kitchen. Actually, it's a little overdone for my taste. Let's not go there again.
You don't want to tell me what happened?
No, I don't. I just want to relax in a nice lukewarm bath.
What about this?
I don't think that can hurt us anymore.
I think, I can't remember which studio this was, but I think they used his laugh during one of the studio tours, like in every tour thing, they would play his laugh.
It's a great laugh.
Because it's just so absurd. And
well,
yeah.
Because it goes on, but also, I mean, in the respect of this movie, you believe him. Like, you believe he's lost it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is one of those, well, of course, I can't do anything but laugh now.
Right.
Yeah, I'm all out of anger.
And he's all out of money.
Well, that too. Yeah, well, plays a big factor through this whole thing, is they have to keep finding sources of money to keep doing all these things. So along come the real plumbing and contractor crew, which was a strange combination of, as it turns out, actual Hell's Angels, and then these, like, leather-clad, like, presumably, like, gay leather guys, and little people, gay leather guys in go-karts, and a demolition truck, an excavator, a monster truck, and the most charming foreman of all foremans, Curly, played by Philip Bosco.
I wrote that it was the Mad Max demolition crew.
Oh, completely. Yeah, one guy has a mohawk, and yeah, they all have, like, axes and stuff. And, yeah, apparently the way to fix the plumbing is from the outside. Who knew? By the way, the house that they filmed this on, this is an actual house, although what we see as the front is, I guess, really the back of the house. But they really demolished the house. Like, you know, everything you see there is the real house that they took pieces off of.
Wow.
And the woman who owned the house was only happy once, you know, there's a scene at the end of this movie where the house is all done and they reconstructed the whole house, and that ending shot is actually the house that they left these people. So it all worked out, but oy. There's a couple times where people see the house and it's like, oh, is this where you do missile testing?
And that's a running theme.
Yeah. And then we have, you know, during this whole time, Walter and Anna still have jobs. By the way, another theme of this thing is they take the train from the city to the train station, but don't have a car to get back and forth. So they keep, like, hitching rides.
Well, or, like, he drove her to the train station in the morning.
Exactly, and he was supposed to pick her up.
Right.
But he can't, because he comes back to find out that the permit guy, he finds out the house is demolished, and, oh, yeah, they don't have a permit to start the work yet. So they'll be back when the permit guy comes back. He came earlier in the day, but he left because no one was there to sign the permit paperwork, because Anna had to go to work, and Walter was already at work. So Walter calls Anna, frustrated, and then has to go up to what they are calling their den and to get the phone number of the permit guy. And he calls the permit guy. The permit guy says he's going to come a little bit later. But unfortunately, Walter then steps on this rug that is covering a hole in the floor. And in probably one of the more iconic scenes from this movie, is stuck in the floor.
Well, and I wrote that, first of all, he's using a rotary phone to call a guy, which is hilarious. And in a fair bit of slapstick, you know, he sets the note on fire with a match, because of course he has to strike a match to read. But clearly this is an era that the movie would have to change, because this is pre-cell phone. And of course he pins himself in the rug in the floor so tightly that he apparently can't move his arms up and out to be able to do anything. Although he apparently has enough dexterity to be able to fold paper airplanes with money that he has. But regardless, so I'm like, this movie would have to be a little updated.
A little bit. Although I love the fact that when he's sitting there, just stuck for things to do, he's singing The Name Game.
Yeah.
Bitterly.
Yes.
And of course, the permit guy comes, and because his chest is constricted, he can't yell down to the permit guy to tell him that he's there, actually. So the permit guy leaves in disgust. And then Anna finally comes up, and there's a little bit of business where she doesn't understand that he's in the floor, so she kind of walks halfway in the room, doesn't see him, and then gets mad because she thinks he's playing a joke on her.
Right.
Then when she
gets kind of irritated.
Yeah, and then you realize, or when she realizes, she's like, oh, okay, and then just to help him get out, of course, she starts pulling up the corners of the rug, which, of course, what that does is actually frees him by plummeting him into the floor below.
But not before he admits that he'd been here so long and that he's hallucinating and that he thought the Care Bears were there earlier.
Exactly, which is also kind of a dated reference, but still funny. So, you know, he's finally, they're trying to slip into bed after a very long, tragic day. And they've got a fire in the fireplace, and he's lighting the fire. The entire fireplace and chimney collapses.
It's another place I laughed out loud.
Yeah, it's just a funny bit of business. And he just immediately rolls or crawls back into bed with soot over his face and just hides under the covers.
Good night.
Yes. And then we cut to 4 months later, where work is in full swing. And, of course, the job that was only supposed to take 2 weeks. That's another running joke. And we see Anna and Walter in bed, and they're starting having an amorous moment, in which Shelley Long was actually, or maybe it was even not Shelley Long, just as an extra or something, but she was like fully wrapped around Walter.
Now she had some pretty dexterous ballerina legs.
Yeah, it was pretty great. And of course, as four workmen are sitting there watching them.
Yeah, intently watching. Yeah.
And which irritates them, not only because they're watching an intimate moment, but because they should be working.
Right. They're being paid to watch.
Exactly. And we can tell now that Walter and Anna's relationship is crumbling. They are irritated with each other. They're irritated with the whole thing. As Walter has to go down and try to get some water, which he does every day. And she's reminding him, he's like, have you ever had to remind me of any, you know, before? You know, this is kind of, you can tell the tension is on the rise. Well,
She pointedly remarks, you know, we're all each other has. Let's not try to take it out on each other, because we're all each other has left at this point. Which is, you know, she's trying to make the best of it.
Oh, yeah, no, they both are, but they're both very irritated. So as he's going to go downstairs through a system of ladders and whatnot, then he sees the stairway has been completed.
And he has one of the best lines in the movie. Hello, Mr. Stairs. I've missed you.
It's because his glee is wonderful.
Well, and he's near hysterical.
Oh, and as he is doing that, Anna is like going to go brush her teeth or whatever, but she actually opens up her medicine cabinet in the wall to get some Alka-Seltzer. And, of course, who's there but a construction worker, Frankie Faison, by the way, from The Sounds of the Lambs and The Wire, who has small talk with her and says, oh yeah, and you're running low on birth control pills. So she has had it up to here with the workmen in their life. But then we have big set piece number 3. Because we have this whole scene with scaffolding and electrical tools and plaster. And it all ends up with Tom.
Well, I wrote that this is a Rube Goldberg rise and descent of Casper.
Oh yeah, it's totally a Rube Goldberg thing, and it's beautiful. It's well set up. It's not quite as sneaky as say the Nazi one on Rat Race, but because it's only set up for a minute or so, but still it's pretty cool. And of course ends with him sitting in the pool or the fountain. And then of course the statuary pees on him.
Right.
But at this point, of course, Walter and Anna's relationship is seriously crumbling, and to get more money, Anna is going to try to secure additional funds from Max by selling him some artwork that she received in the divorce. Now, he doesn't care about the painting, but he agrees to the purchase and ends up whining and dining her because she is completely stressed.
Well, because he has, you know, like walls and a shower.
Exactly, yes, and a warm bed. So they wine and dine, and then the next morning, she wakes up in his bed. And she's like, oh my God, what have I done? I need to immediately start lying. And Max is like, don't, just tell him. It's okay. You can come back to me. Which I realize sounds a little Transylvanian, but not so bad with the good enough.
Sounds a lot like the Count.
Yeah. one extramarital affair. Actually, she's not married. And anyway, yeah. So she makes this lavish dinner for Walter. And he, by the way, he hitches a ride in Eric Stoller, the artist's Lightmobile. That is the Volkswagen Bug, the old Volkswagen Bug, covered in lights and controlled by a computer.
Yes.
Which I think is beautiful.
So the song?
Oh, which song is it?
I Am a Pizza.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I forgot about that.
It's like the third time I've mentioned it.
It's a pizza delivery car.
Yes.
So is this a song created for the movie, or is this...
I don't believe so. I believe it's a real song.
Huh. Well, I'll have to maybe shove that in here, because I had forgotten it. I am a pizza. Pepperoni.
No anchovies. It's a hilarious, I mean, it's a pizza delivery song. Of course, he's wearing like the stereotypical Italian Chef Boyardee white hat in the car.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's clearly a pizza delivery guy, but it's still very, and of course, the art car I thought was fantastic. You know, I'm not necessarily much for that kind of art, except there's something about all the lights and the fact that they're all synchronized makes me happy in my soul. So, you know, he gets back and she has made this wonderful dinner for him. And he's like, oh, where'd you eat? And she's like, oh, the Four Seasons last night. And then he pointedly asks if she slept with Max. And she denies it. But Walter is suspicious. And then finally, after some hemming and hawing and going to bed and waking up and going to bed and waking up, finally she admits that she slept with him. And of course, he's like, just tell me, I won't be mad. And then immediately when she says, yes, I'm sorry, it was a moment of weakness and I had too much to drink and yes, I slept with him. And then it just cuts to, you whore!
And they have a pretty heated altercation. And I think it's the next day.
Yeah, I'm gonna drop in the next morning.
Because that night, I think when they talk about who's sleeping in the room and he slams open... He throws open the door, and then he pulls the door off, and he's like, the plasterer came?
Yeah, yeah. They have an argument that night, but then the next morning when they wake up, they continue the argument in front of all the workers who, you know, follow them from room to room and are, you know, observers. I mean, they're almost eating popcorn while watching this.
You're up bright and early.
I didn't sleep very well.
You look great. Got a date?
Yes, with the Marine Corps Band. I'm starting with the brass, and I'm working my way into the drum section.
Don't you think we should talk?
It's not the time to talk. I'm mad. I'm getting madder.
Oh, you're mad! What do you think I am?
I think you're a jerk.
I know that. I didn't realize how big a jerk I was until last night.
Neither did I.
Let's just pack it in then, all right? Let's just finish this whole thing right here and now.
Fine.
I'll pack a bag for you so you don't have to come back tonight, and I'll send the rest later.
You expect me to move out?
You shouldn't have any trouble finding a bed.
I got a bed, lady.
Get the hell out of here! This is private!
I don't know what makes you think you can just throw me out of my own house. You're the one who's moving.
I have worked and slept, suffered, put myself in tires with my eyes, and you want me to move out because you've got a paper mask. No way, you hear me? No way!
I have worked and slaved and suffered for this house every bit as much as you have. Actually more, because I had to put up with you.
This is ridiculous! You don't even like this house. You never liked it.
I love this house!
You've done nothing but complain about it since we got here.
I did one other thing, Walter. I sunk every nickel I had in the world in this house.
And you'll get it all back. I told you that.
Me and everyone you ever met. I'll pay you back will be written on your gravestone.
I wouldn't give lectures on the value of promises. Your word didn't do too well in this last outing.
Yours is fine. It's certainly a lot better than your check.
I'll get you your money back.
I don't want the money. This is my house and I'm not moving.
It's a big house. We'll divide it up. You stay in your half, I'll stay in mine.
That is such a dumb idea. Sometimes it amazes me you ever passed the bar.
I'm sure it does. You've never passed a bar in your life.
You are so much less attractive when I'm sober.
Thank goodness it's not that often.
All right, that's it! I've had it with you and the house and Max and the orchestra and everything. How long will it take to put this place together?
2 weeks.
Okay. We'll stick it out until the house is finished. Then we'll sell it, get our money back, and get the hell away from each other.
Fine.
Get back to work!
There's a lot of those, but he always manages to one-up her.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Which finally she's just like, enough.
Yes. So that's when Max shows up. And Max, you know, comes into the house and she's packing her stuff and she's explaining that, you know, there's no more she and Walter. They've broken up. And Max is like, oh, good, you can come back to me. And she's like, no, I've got to leave. He's like, oh, you have to leave the symphony too. What have I done? And then he admits that he had made up the whole part about her sleeping with him.
What are you doing here?
You missed the rehearsal.
That's right.
Did you tell Walter what happened between us?
Yes.
What did he say?
Walter and I are through. I hate us both.
Well, you'll get over it. You'll come back to me.
No. I'm just going away someplace.
You can't go anywhere. We have performances.
You don't understand. I have to get away from here. Both of you.
You are leaving the symphony. What have I done?
No, it wasn't your fault. It was my fault. I was weak.
No, you weren't.
What?
I made it up.
You made what up, Max?
You slept in the bedroom. I slept in the living room. Sex would have been a miracle.
Oh, Max!
I wanted you back, and I truly thought that I could make you happy this time.
Max.
Tell Walter the truth.
No. He couldn't forgive me, and I can't forgive him for that.
He's lost a wonderful woman, and I know what it's like. I've lost many. You must hate me.
No. I used to hate you. Now I hate Walter.
Walter!
Well, this is an unexpected revulsion. Are you hot? Can I take your life?
Walter, I can see that my presence here could be construed as being in poor taste.
No!
Do you realize what you've done? You've taken a woman who loves you, one of the great women on the face of this earth, and thrown her away. I've lost her too. But I'll get over it because I'm shallow and self-centered. But you, because you are complex. You will suffer terrible anguish for the rest of your life. This is turning out to be a pretty good day. Good day. Smooth strokes. Up and down. Pain. Don't tickle. And don't smoke.
And she says, okay, see, I made it up, you know, no big deal. And she's like, well, no, that doesn't fix anything. If Walter can't forgive me, then I can't forgive him. So, you know, that's the trust issue on her part. But that's when Max comes down and Tom Hanks has, I'm going to drop this in too, because of course Max's speech is pretty great. But
I wrote down the whole speech on the plane. I rewound it like 5 times to get all of it.
Oh, it starts off with, you know, Max, this is an unexpected revulsion. You look hot. Can I take your life?
Yeah, no, Walter's got some pretty unbridled hostility there, but
followed, which is great, a good speech, absolutely. Followed by, he sees one of the workmen painting, and he takes the paintbrush from him and says, paint, don't tickle. And it says, and don't smoke. And
I think don't diddle is what he says.
I think he said don't tickle.
I think it's diddle.
We'll go to the judges for this. Not the East German judge, I don't trust her.
Yeah, it's that whole, you know, they're going to bust her versus they're going to fuck her, so.
Perhaps, yes. It turns out it was bust. What can you do? But,
Sorry, that's a little, for those of you who haven't heard, shame on you, but that's a callback to the Lethal Weapon podcast, which you should go listen to right now if you haven't.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Lethal Weapon was a funny movie and someday I will put out the Scrooged podcast that we recorded, but I frankly just ran out of time with all the Christmas running around. And then both brothers let me off the hook, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, that's fine. I'll get it out when I get it out. And if people don't like it, they can write or call. But so thank you. We'll see. I'll put that out at some point because it's a fun conversation about Scrooge. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the Money Pit.
Yeah, and hopefully Fight Club too.
Oh, yeah. No, Fight Club will come out pretty soon because that was a lot of fun. So, but there's no time limit necessarily on Fight Club like there was, I thought, on Scrooge. But anyway. So, by the way, this is the sweet part of the movie, really. It's, of course, the end is coming, but because we have this really good speech by Max, who's, you know, sheds a little bit of truth, gives a little bit of, spreads a little truth on Walter.
Well, and I think kind of the implication is that Max is telling Walter, like, look, I'm a schmuck, and I would have done anything to get her, and she doesn't want me.
Yes. But so you're
throwing her away is going to hurt you. It's not going to hurt me.
Yeah. So, so Max may be a horrible guy, but he's not a horrible, he's not like evil. He's just shallow and self-centered.
Right.
So,
admittedly.
Yeah. But then you got this great speech by Curly, who, you know, he's sort of musing to himself as they're both standing on opposite ends of the big entryway of this house because they now can't be in the same room with each other. And they've only agreed to stay together till the house is finished and they can sell it. But, Curly makes a great speech about how, he didn't think they'd ever get this job done, but as it turns out, if the foundation's okay, then everything else can be fixed. So, at the very end, Walter and Anna have this little conversation about how they're both just going to leave, neither of them going to stay in the house. And Walter admits that he's missed Anna, and he loves her, and he doesn't care if he slept with Max, he still wants her back. And she then happily tells him, oh, they didn't sleep together, as it turns out. All misunderstanding. Ha ha ha. And they reconcile. And they get married in front of their newly repaired house, where everybody's in the crowd, including Lana and the Cheap Girls, and Benny and his mom.
And Max.
And Max. Oh, yeah, Max, who's conducting the ensemble that's performing, and given a little wink to the female in White Lion, because they are also performing. And then the movie ends with we cut back to Rio de Janeiro, where we have Carlos, Estelle's husband, who's now selling a dilapidated old house to Walter Sr. and his new bride. So presumably they are con artists who do this all over the world. And then, again, we began and ended with Rio, and we also began and end with the same 80s cheesy song, The Heart Is So Willing. Ugh. Yeah, a very, very fun movie.
So it makes you wonder if that they, I mean, I assume that this was really not an attempt to set up a sequel.
No, probably not. But it'd be kind of funny if it was, I suppose. It'd be a whole different dynamic. And since this is a remake of an original, you know, of a classic movie, it makes me wonder how the classic movie ends.
Yeah. Well, I might have to go watch it. But with the his dad's character at that time, I believe, was still a full-fledged soap opera star.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, there were a lot of funny, you know, fun people. Oh, I didn't even mention that the guy who was in 1985-86, very popular, Body by Jake, you know, fitness trainer to the stars, he was one of the construction workers. He's the guy that was painting the hallway and the everything blue.
Right.
And, you know, Walter's like, blue, not, it's all wood. Don't paint it blue. Anyway. So, yeah. So, thank you. The Money Pit was pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, no, it still made me laugh. You know, I knew most of the movie still, but I still laughed out loud.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, not heavy lifting movies, but fun. I mean, if it was on TV, I'd probably watch the whole thing.
Yeah, I think it's one of those that anytime I see it on, it makes me, I get sucked into it, but I own it, so.
Yeah. Anyway. So, anything else on our list for tonight?
I did get through both the Die Hard and the Lethal Weapon episodes.
And?
That made me laugh.
Cool.
Both of them.
Excellent.
Die Hard, I've never actually seen Die Hard all the way through.
It's worth seeing.
I've seen parts of it. I've seen the movie in total in parts. I've just never seen the movie in its entirety in one consecutive sequence. So I think, isn't the sequel, doesn't Jeremy Irons play?
I think in the third one, Jeremy Irons plays
the brother of.
Yeah, Hans's brother.
Yeah, okay.
So, anyway. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.